Welcome, friends. Welcome to the End Evil podcast, where evil is the destruction of freedom. Evil is the destruction of freedom everywhere, all the time. And that's the problem we're working with. Here on the End Evil podcast, we're looking for the light for humanity. We're trying to set a legacy for the future of understanding and recognizing natural law, studying and teaching the principles that this whole reality we're experiencing in rides on, and everything hinges on those principles. Today, I have a special guest I'm looking forward to sharing with you guys. I got with me Conrad Rogas, and Conrad did a presentation at the Freedom Under Natural Law 4 conference that really impressed me, called The Sonic Divorce, Man's Estrangement from Nature. And we were just starting to chat a little bit about the flows of nature and the sounds. Conrad's coming to us from Chicago, and we were talking about the difference between the city and nature. And then I was like, hey, let's just record. So yeah, welcome, Conrad. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me and for having the platform to have me. And first of all, I wanted to thank you and congratulate you for the conference. Great conference, then the presentation, and then having this podcast to talk about it. So it's the triple crown over here. So I'm very happy to be able to talk. And yeah, like you said, we just say hi to each other, and all of a sudden we were doing material, which is how it should be. That's the whole thing about flow. This is the thing we get separated from. So it's nice to just go right into it, because that's the whole thing about natural laws. You got to live it. Yeah, it's not just, you don't turn it on and off. It's, this is it, right?
Yeah. Like, how do you pronounce your last name properly? Rogas? Rogas?
I say Rogas. In the original Polish way, it would be Rogus. So,
it almost has a Russian sound.
Yeah, right. It's I'm Polish, you know, so it's that Eastern. It's in Conrad's a Germanic name, but also, of course, the Eastern influence. It's adjustable, like us, you know, craftsmen have to be, like the adjustable wrench.
Yeah,
however to fit the occasion.
Right on. Cool. Yeah, you know, talk about turning it off. When we were talking about that thing with nature, it was taking me back to these experiences I had with my kids. I had two daughters, still do. They're awesome daughters. I love them. And but a lot of times I got to play Mr. Mom when they were young girls, right? One thing I would do is take them out to nature. We had a couple hikes we'd go to. One of them was called the waterfall hike. And I had the luxury, being in Northern California, of living pretty close to the beach. And so the beach was one of my favorites. And I used to have this thing I called the switch. And you could have the girls around the house in the morning, you know, I'm trying to make coffee or whatever, breakfast. And they're little problems are happening. Someone's crying. Someone's complaining. Things aren't quite going smooth. But by the time I get everybody packed in the car, and we get out to the beach, it's not, even on the way, usually wouldn't be that great. There'd be some complaining, some whining, I don't want to go, that type of thing. But as soon as the doors open and we're out on the beach, it's like the switch would just engage. And all of a sudden, one of my daughters has a stick in her hand, and she's off in fun imagination, la la land. All this things she was worried about and complaining about on the way and at the house are just gone for hours, right? And we're all just playing on the beach, having fun. We hit the switch. And to me, that switch is literally like turning on nature's flows and turning off society's cultural slave mentality bullshit that keeps us all pinned in this network of frustration all the time. So I thought that'd be a good introductory little story to give you an opportunity to talk on nature's flows.
It is. And I don't know if you intended to do it, but this stick there made me think of a wand. And that's the imagery you were bringing up for me. And right, the first card of the tarot, and it is magic to turn that on. And it's not just nature that's magical, it's we, the person, the individual is magical. And like electrical wiring, there has to be a connection to be able to flip that switch on. I also think about the water. Like, what is it that's so special about the beach? And this is, you know, the motif of the beach was actually very much in my mind when I'm thinking about the presentation, because I have one of these experiences, these times where it's related very much to the beach and kind of that water. Really, I even did a couple songs about that concept of reflections and the solar and the lunar, then the interplay of the water with that kind of fire spirit. You know, it's almost like I want to talk about everything at once when you say that, but it's present everywhere in all aspects of life, right? I think about nature's flow, and you can absolutely feel it when you're with the family, when you're at the beach. But not only that, I mean, even pounding away with the jackhammer, it's in every corner. The reason we get separated from it is because it's this detachment worldview. We get so detached, right? Either stuck in our repetition, our rhythms, or approaching people like they're a million miles away from us. And we don't think of them as our family. We just think of them as strangers, right? And this is kind of what was behind the sonic divorce. I'm thinking of this separation, this taking away of the medium, the thing that connects us. And then there is no sound without the medium for the sound to travel through it.
Yeah, I like that. Okay, the waves, the sound of the waves is typically one of the most meditation friendly sounds that's out there, you know, trying to help get people to relax. How about the sounds of the waves? And you're right, that's something you really said in that presentation about nature soundtrack really stuck with me on this topic, because I've noticed it for a long time. In order to clear my head or get myself straight, I have to go out in nature sometimes and take a walk. My Funnel 3 presentation, was it Funnel 3, where I climbed Castle Crags, one of my favorite hikes. You get up on top of these rocks and you got 8,000 foot drops, you know, and there's nothing like clearing your head but standing up there and just looking at the mountainsides and the beauty, and it just strikes a chord right deep within me. And this thing of music and sound that you bring up, and the correlation between our relationship with each other and the planet, it's like right now it's not very harmonious. There's a lot of cacophony, a lot of static. For me, like I love telling stories. I guess the warriors are the ones that tell me, like, Chris, you're the old guy that tells stories. And so I realize it does come naturally to use stories as metaphors. And when I was young, rather than going off to college at 18, I joined a volunteer service, and I wound up working out in the Western Pennsylvania, where I was just surrounded by farms and not a lot of people. You know, there'd be a few people at the staff, and they'd leave at the end of the day, and it would just be crickets and cows and quiet and dark, too dark I'd never seen before. And when I came back to East San Jose, where I grew up, and spent my first night, I was just blown away by the sounds. The soundtrack is like police sirens, gunshots, people, cars, just constantly wah, 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 beep, beep, noises all night long. A cacophony of not even happy sounding. That was one of the first time I made it connection in my head that the sirens sound like babies crying. It sounds like hundreds of babies crying. And then compare that to where I was in Western Pennsylvania, where the soundtrack is nature's meditation beauty, you know? And you look at thousands, millions of people living packed in these cities, going to bed every night to that soundtrack of cacophony, of disruption. No wonder people are having trouble getting along. That's just one thing, you know? So, yeah. Yeah, how's it sound on where you're at in Chicago? Pretty loud, right?
I was going to say it sounds like Chicago over there. It's so much for the Pacific, right? San Jose. But absolutely, I think about driving in traffic is just about the most frustrating thing. And that's not just the sound of it, but you think about the sound of the honks. Yeah, the sirens, the honks, these things that are, they're intended to sound unpleasant, like an alarm or something. It can't be normal for us to exist in that like in a perpetual state of, I think about like hypervigilance with soldiers or people that, you know, they're constantly in a state where they're on high alert. If we got high alert sounds going on there, I don't see how we can function well under those conditions. But also, you know, as we talk about sound, when you mentioned Western Pennsylvania, I actually thought about the sites, because when I went through there 2 years ago to Mark Passio's presentation and over there in Exton, it was the colors that blew me away. Those hills, and it was, you know, this is around the fall, right? October. So that completely blew me away. So, you know, we can focus in on the sound, but it's all five of the senses that we're separated from, a lot of us, you know, being in the urban jungle or whatever kind of high stress environments. It's not just the sounds, right?
Oh, no, absolutely. In fact, where I should record, I've been meaning to film this. Not every day, but most days when I go to work, I drive across Shasta Lake. And Shasta Lake is like right under the shadow of Mount Shasta, which is this amazingly beautiful mountain with big white cap on it and mountains all around with green trees everywhere in the winter. And I get these views that, to me, they're almost like orgasmic. It's hard to describe. Like, I have a similar feeling that I do looking at a beautiful female that I do looking at the contour of the mountains and the trees. And I get this kind of rush through me when I see it. And it's like, whew, I'm so glad I get to see this every day. For many years of my life, like growing up in the Bay Area, got an hour of solid traffic on freeways, looking at the backs of other cars and the freeway walls, you know? And so just living somewhere where you can experience the visual beauty of nature is a huge addition to my life and my general well-being. So you're right. All these things are triggering us state of mind, you know?
Yeah, you're speaking my language, Chris. I absolutely know where you're coming from. And that's why I stress relationships in what I talk about, because it's, you know, for long periods throughout my life, I was detached from nature. I was detached from the beauty all around me. And now in the last few years, it's just overwhelming. All the time, I just think about the bounty, the beauty of nature. And, you know, gratitude is a word that was coming to mind a lot when I was, you know, watching the Funnel 4 conference. It's just I was just so thankful for being around these people and being in this world and having the opportunities to express this way. And other people are expressing with me. So it's this, it is connection again. So the beauty is almost overwhelming. And even I get this every time I look at the skyline in Chicago, when I drive to the city, it takes my breath away every time, even though that's man-made stuff. So I guess I just kind of throw that in there, not to switch topics, but just kind of, we have to remember that the beauty is not just outside from us. Yeah, nature is beautiful. It is like the curves of a woman, and then like this is what gives us that feeling. But then we're also the beauty is also within us. Like, nature needs us, not just the man, but the individual, to interplay with it, to use it and mold it, like change it with our hands, and create something that would not have happened without us. Like, we come from nature too, so we're her. But she's also within us, and she's asking us to do more, to create something, to advance, right? This song of life.
Oh man, that's reminding me of Brandon Spencer's presentation on the hands. That was a few back he did at a different conference. And then Grouch and there's some rappers that have this song called "These Hands." Motherfucker, these hands, built this from the ground up with a foolproof plan. These hands, you know, like everything we bring into existence, you know. And then here I'm a guy who manipulates tools with my hands, and that's one of the ways that you see reality changing in front of us. You know, we're literally putting the blocks together that are going to build something that people are going to walk on. you know? So that's, man, deep stuff, and hit me right where I work. But I'm curious in terms of understanding how things work. Like, it already blows me away how much knowledge you have. I was just looking over your website, truthandlaw.com. People check that out when you get a chance. Conrad's done an amazing job. It's a beautiful website, and he's got quite a bit of work on there, videos, a whole progression of thought. How did this happen for you, Conrad? Like, you kind of referred to a time in your life when you didn't maybe get this stuff. One of my favorite things to understand about people is, how did that transition happen? How did you wake up, basically?
Thank you for that. And it always catches me off guard, the question, like, oh man, now I got to talk about how this all happened, because it's not even logical. It's not even that nice of a progression, because kind of the biggest charge against me, like the worst thing about it all, is that I've known some of this stuff for a while. Of course, I didn't come across natural law really per se until 2019, 2020. But I even think back to around 2016, I was messing around with the numerology and gematria, and already, you know, I was awake to kind of the deception in the world. I was, when I first kind of had my awakening moment, it wasn't really that, it was, but it was around 2009, 2010 that I'm listening to some of these researchers, when I'm first coming across like David Icke, and at that time, a lot of that through Alex Jones and Jordan Maxwell. So imagine me being like 14, and this is the stuff I listened to, because I was always rebellious, but this is the thing, I was not ready within myself. So I continued to be rebellious, but in a very self-destructive way. There was a lot of emotional work, just a lot that I went through, and it basically manifested through addiction. I wanted to be that. This is the thing, like, I always wanted to be a heroic man, right? This is always the thing, but I went into that left-hand path of that. So I was a drug dealer. I was partying all the time. You know, I was intelligent, but I didn't put the work in to kind of back that up and really grow. So I was smart enough to say, forget school and all that, but not smart enough not to really destroy myself. And I saw an opposition between myself and the world, like, I'm not meant to be here. So I kind of was in this kind of haze, this kind of lone wolf, dark expression, trying to find my masculinity and kind of find my purpose. So I had to come around. I got sober. I stopped destroying myself. So it was really like an all or nothing decision. That's the way I saw it. And I had three big car accidents in 2 years, one in 2019 and two in 2020. And I kind of had this moment of choice, like, what on earth is happening? You have the critical moment of choice. It's like I had that. And I literally chose between life and death. If we went into the details, it sounds like a pretty crazy story, but it really is. I haven't changed much. I'm still the same person. I just make different decisions. I'm still extreme. I'm still wild. It's just, I'm wild in pursuing the good now. I'm still a thrill seeker. I'm still a pleasure chaser. It's just, I chase long-term fulfillment, like real lasting pleasure. This is what we all want. So what can I say? I'm a crackhead for truth, you know?
I really, something about the way you vibrate and put out your word. Like, when I saw the conference, I'm like, man, I feel like Conrad and I were like friends in another lifetime or something. We're very, like, a lot of similarities in our personality. I've always kind of felt like the wild one in the group. Like, everybody's talking about something and I'm like, let's do it. I'll go climb across the log or whatever, you know, like, or someone will say, Chris, why are you always pushing the line? You know, I'm like, I don't know. I just do that. Mm-hmm. And it's funny to hear. I like the way you say active rebellion in your work. And like, rebellion's a good thing in a world that's gone awry. And I think a lot of young people are going through what you're describing of feeling detached, feeling like they don't belong. I've heard so many young people say, I hate people. I don't like people. Even older people, like, you know, in our movement that say that same thing. And I understand why people say that, because most of the people out there are kind of like just glomming on to an evil plan that's not good at all. And any of us that have the instinct deep inside saying, whoa, you know, this doesn't seem right. I don't see myself as identifying with that type of stuff, you know. And it explains to me a lot, like, why there's so many homeless people that get rejected out of society. Yeah, there's laziness. Yeah, there's drug use. But there's generally a large group of people that are just kind of feeling this. I don't belong with this crap. And so they go the other direction, not knowing why, not doing it with purpose, but just sort of falling into these cesspools that this evil society offers. So, man, I kind of like 2010, 2011 is when I really date back to me, my Matrix awakening. And I also, like you're saying, I feel like I didn't change that much in a lot of ways, but there was this drastic kind of like, oh, shoot, realization. Then what do we do with it? You know? So I guess the next question I'd like to ask you is, how about your dealings with other people, friends, family, people close to you, from the time you're describing, like 2010, that time in your life, that era when you kind of made the shift? How did relationships change, and how have you dealt with people that don't understand what the heck you're talking about or don't want to hear it, and trying to deal with the relationship aspect of that change that's happening within yourself?
So it's going, I guess it's a two-part answer to that, because a lot of the relationships that I had while, say, I was in my early 20s and teens, those relationships are all done because they weren't based on any shared values, really. We were just doing the same thing. So a lot of the people I knew at school, I don't have a relationship with them. So there really was like a flipping the switch of sorts. So a lot of those relationships just went away. As far as the people who have stayed in my life, I've been incredibly fortunate. Like, my family is moderately awake and receptive, and I know that's rare. A lot of, not saying that everybody, but a lot of people in this Polish community in Chicago, where there's a lot of us here, they're more, a lot of them are like very caught up in the conservative aspect of it now. Like, they're kind of lost in the sauce. But in general, it's not so much that I'm being alienated from the people around me. Some people around me, like people I work with, I'll be able to tell them about things that I'm working on, and they're somewhat receptive to it. Other than that, I know that's not the case for many people. Other than that, these are all new relationships that I've formed with people who think kind of similar to how I think. Or if we don't, there are plenty of people I know who maybe don't have the same worldview or philosophy as I do, but there are good things about them. So I try to cultivate those relationships, even with people who, if you ask them what their philosophy is, it's going to be nothing like natural law. It's, you know, freedom may be a word that means something different to them. But I try not to push people away. You know, I try to like cultivate relationships with them and find the good things about them and find what we have in common, as opposed to kind of what is separating us. And everybody's going through their journey. Like, if you would have talked to me in 2019, there were people that talked to me. They said, hey, what are you doing? You're throwing your life away. And they were right. But I couldn't hear them. So everybody's going through that journey. And a very important thing is just to just kind of be there, to try to be reliable, try to be consistent. So that's, when you say relationships with people, that's what I think about. There are not every relationship is different. And I have no problem with letting go of the ones that just, they didn't click in the first place. I got relationships with people that are completely based in shared values and everything. And then I got people that are kind of in between, you know? And I guess the key lies in managing how much time you're going to dedicate and whether it serves both you and the other person, right? Because it's not just what you can get out of people, it's what you can contribute to their life as well.
Yeah, it's a lot about a value exchange. And I feel like that's where timing comes in. And when I re-listened to your presentation yesterday while I was working here in the garage, and you brought up timing, and I had to stop and take a note, because I've always had the saying, timing is everything. I say it a lot at work. I find myself saying it there a lot. And timing is everything. When I think back to when I had certain realizations in my life that change the trajectory of how I make decisions going forward, and there was a timing aspect. If I hadn't have heard the other information before I heard this current information, it might not have clicked the way it did right at that moment. And so I think we need to keep that in mind in relationships with other people. I remember back when I was first looking into a lot of this freedom stuff, I was listening to some podcasts where people were saying, like, if you have statist friends, you need to disconnect, you know, like they were actually like, say, no, you need to insulate yourself from these people. And I understand that strategy on the one hand, but I'm more like you're saying, like, consistency and persistence are things that people look up to. And if you can become someone who's trustworthy and reliable, then other people that may be misguided, or maybe I'm misguided, I have to keep that as a possibility in my head, even however sure I am of truth, I still have to keep that possibility that there could be aspects or ways I'm seeing things that are misguided. Otherwise, how can I expect someone else to really fully listen to me if I don't have that openness to change a little bit, you know, to adjust to what they're saying? And I noticed you really caught on to that adjustable wrench concept I brought up. So I know I have a tendency when I ask questions or when I interview someone to like bring up a whole bunch of stuff and then throw it at them. And they're like, oh, I've got like 20 answers in my head, but let's just stick with timing for now. What I'm saying about timing, how does that hit you? Good timing.
good timing. And it relates to, I think, to how we started, because timing is like a thing. It's the perfect, shot. If you think about it, like it's just clicking, something is aligning at the right time. Now, you know, we are just going through our lives. There's no way to kind of recreate that timing. You could do your best, but it's like one of these shot, like you wouldn't do it if you tried. This sometimes happens, like you throw over a little nail and it lands like this and it'll land on the head or something like that. It's hard to recreate it, but all you can do is, like you said, the persistence. So all you can do is just kind of be there and put yourself in a position where you're at least allowing that, I don't know, perfection or you know, perfect timing to actually manifest. All we could do is just give nature a shot to work with us, right? It's not so much trying to force the right timing. Timing a lot is just about letting go. This is I focused on this a lot, this kind of flow state, what they call it. You have to be relaxed for it. You can't, it's very hard to press and everything will be the way you imagine. Oftentimes, then you just end up looking like a jackass. You know, you have to have that confidence to kind of have that slow step where you're, and again, the adjustable wrench where you're balanced. You could go left, you could go right based on what the situation calls for, not trying to execute this pre-planned rigid idea and then hoping that it manifests exactly how you imagined it. There's a lot of nuance. So when you say you throw out a million things at once, I feel the same. I'm like, man, I'm glad he started talking about timing, because I said like four different things. This is how I am as well. And I think I've been thinking timing is so important for so long. And I said this to somebody like a few months ago. I'm like, the universe is just all about timing. And she's like, okay, I don't know how you mean, but you know, like that's the thing. I struggled so much with that presentation. Like this is like my whole metaphysical view of the universe. How do I present this in 1 hour? This is impossible.
Yeah, there's so much correspondence in things. And something I've described as quantum thinking is like when you take one thing, well, it's like a metaphor. That's why I tell stories. You take one thing and your mind makes a comparison to another thing on another level. It's finding two points like in a graph that correspond. Yeah, they're in different places, but they're a similar color or a similar vibration, or they have a similar aspect to them. And then once you open up that other dot, a lot of times there'll be three or four other levels that will start to kind of make sense. And I find myself in conversation trying to jump back between these different levels and trying to bring the conversation back around and make it make sense. And depending on who you're talking to, sometimes it's like, oh, you're making too many jumps there. You know, it's like, well, I'm thinking in a quantum way, but it's sometimes difficult to form your rhetoric when you're doing that. Sorry to interrupt you, but yeah.
No, that's that absolutely fits right in. One of the things in your presentation, Spiritual Mathematics, which I also listened to last night, you brought up the Mandelbrot set, which I wasn't familiar with, but I am very familiar with this fractal idea of self-similarity across scales. And people may say that the way we talk, like it's not linear. Well, maybe it's not linear. It doesn't mean that there is not a logical progression. Not everybody, it's not always the right approach, right, to talk about things in this way, but it is really cool and like amazing when you can talk with somebody who can kind of follow that. Because when I bring up timing, the other thing I was going to jump to is nuance. And even just as much as timing is important, the word nuance comes up a lot these days in how I think and how I convey, you know, how I see the world. And there is nuance to it. So as soon as I start talking about the way I see something, it's like I see the other, it's like the sword that is double-edged. And I see the other half of it and I think, okay, I just talked about how timing is important. So you kind of have to let go and let things manifest and not force it to happen. At the same time, we just talked about persistence. So you do kind of have to have this blueprint that you're rolling with, so that the person you're talking to, you're letting them, you know, you're giving them that safety, that stability, that where you're trying to take them in this mental progression, giving them a chance to follow you. So you have to follow a straight path. You can't just be going like this all the time. And it's nuance is, it's not contradiction. I don't buy contradiction anywhere in the universe. I'm a non-contradictionist, but there's a lot of nuance in the universe. And I think to be effective teachers of natural law, this is going to be key for us to be able to not sound dogmatic. We've been having dogmatic teachings for generations and generations, and it's not going to get the people that aren't already in our circles. We need to be able to relate to them. We need to kind of let them lead for a little bit, right? Not just teach them. We're teachers and students, right?
Yeah, it's a tricky balance. You know, there's another word, you know, like I always think of watching my little ones when they were too small to just get to that point where they're just learning to walk and they're teetering all the time. And there's coffee tables and there's concrete steps, and there's, you know, you're seeing every little drop off as a parent, and you're trying to find the balance between not letting them break their head open and letting them discover how gravity works so they can manage it. And you know that you have to kind of like let them fall sometimes. And the same is true of people around us that feels like they're not getting what we're trying to talk about. We have to adjust the way we go about talking about it. Or adjust the way we go about interacting with that person to an extent to finally find that place where we can kind of dial in. That's why I like the adjustable pliers, where we kind of dial in the right size for depending on who we're talking to. One size fits all doesn't work. That's the problem with collectivism. They're trying to make rules and say everybody's going to follow these rules. And it's like, well, if you're living in the desert, you're going to do completely different things if you're living in the snow. You know, and so how are we going to follow the same rules when you're slipping in the snow and you're sweating in the sun? They're going to be two different situations, and we can't expect a one size fits all rule to work, which is why laws, man's laws, are silly on their face because they don't allow for nuance and context of every individual situation that is, you know, between us and God. And that's a lot there, right?
The protocol has to change, like, right? Like our protocols cannot be one size fits all. Now, of course, natural law is universal, but that's why it's, for this conversation, it's almost better not to say natural law. We're talking about natural principles. Principles are universal, but the actual rule set is going to change. The set of behaviors is going to change based on the circumstance. So it's totally right what you say about this collective rule set not applying to everyone. And you brought up your girls, and I think parenting is the same. It is that you also can't have a parenting blueprint, right? Because you're going to have to adjust. I mean,
kids think parenting come out different. Like one personality is so different from another. You cannot try the same parenting on one kid as you do the other. It's not going to work the same.
And I think that's why parenting is like the ultimate test. It's like the ultimate, it's the most, I'm not a parent, but I can see that this is like your lesson. It teaches you so much, because that's the thing. You're going crazy in your head trying to protect them from the dangers of what can happen in the world. You know, it can go wrong. But at the same time, you have to let them go through it and see the results.
About the switch. I remember when my first daughter was born, there was a different switch that went off in my head when I realized, like, oh, this is forever. This is a forever thing. Even if she dies or I die, I'm always going to be her dad. No matter whatever happens, the rest of my life, the rest of her life, I'm responsible for this being. And it's the first time in your life when you're not the most important thing in your life at all, you know, and you do kind of have to take that place in terms of survival and living. But part of your mind knows that you'd give it all away in a minute to help this little thing survive and surpass, because it's your new model, you know, and it needs to make it. And it's a weird thing it does to the brain of recognizing sacrifice and recognizing importance of, like, yeah, I'm super important, I'm the center of me, but this little thing I made might become more important at any moment, you know.
It's almost like it's a even if we were existing under the worst possible conditions and didn't even speak the same language, had nothing in common, under total tyranny, just that switch you talk about being a parent, that would teach us the lesson of these universal principles. It does flip that switch. I think, you know, I think a lot of the reason young men, you know, like me, like I was, go through these issues is because, you know, a lot of us need to be fathers at that time. And then that switch goes off, and then you say, oh man, I need to get my life together. Right. Like I know a lot of guys that happened to them, and it turned them around.
Got a text from a carpenter I worked with when he was like a brand new, he was my apprentice, and he just had a child. And I've seen this multiple times, a guy who's kind of like you were describing, partying, living that kind of wild lifestyle. All of a sudden their girl's like, I'm pregnant. And then they're like, oh shoot, I got to clean up, I got to get a job, I got to start making some money. And then I've seen it over and over. And this guy now, years later, he's doing pretty good in his career. And he sent me a message of, I remember when I first worked for you. Thanks. You know,
awesome. So
that's pretty cool. But yeah, I hope I didn't stop your train of thought there. Just reminded me.
I'm glad you backed my point up with your real life example, and they're all over the place. We actually have so many teachers, you know, teaching moments like that. It's really everywhere. Going back to sound, like, we literally would have to go like this and scream at the top of our lungs to be as ignorant as we are. If you really think about it, there's you know, every day we are taught the lessons that, okay, if you overindulge, you're not going to be happy with yourself. We get taught all the time that there's an inherent selfishness to us. We want things for ourselves. We care about who we are. We want the things that we care about. But at the same time, we need something else. You know, the what we learn about sacrificing for something that you totally love, you would do anything, you would give it all up. Well, there you go. That's the lesson again. We have to be able to, as much as we love everything, you know, that's around us, nature and all of its beauty, we're ready to give it all up for principles. The principles that make the beauty possible in the first place.
Absolutely. So combining kind of like things we've been talking about, like timing, sacrifice, and nuance. One way I see this affecting us being content creators and talking to people about specifically truth, freedom, natural law, one thing we run into is this term anarchy, right? Where we keep finding people in our community or at the fringes trying to reestablish this word anarchy and say, oh, it doesn't mean chaos. It doesn't mean throwing grenades into crowds. It means no rulers, right? And I've seen over and over people kind of saying like, I'm an anarchist. And I was just talking with some of my close friends recently about this. And to me, that's kind of like one of those areas that I'm gentle with. I get out the adjustable pliers and I go, well, I don't really like to claim to be an anarchist. And here's why. I'm not living like a true anarchist. I'm not saying to the government, no, I will fight you to the death. I'm not ready to fight every policeman that tries to pull me over. I'm not ready to stop paying my registration. Sorry, guys, I'm just not there. And part of my realization is that we are actively in a system of slavery. And in order to get out of that system, it's going to require some teamwork and some better understanding of principles. And so in terms of timing, where I feel like we're at in the progression of humanity is we're not ready to be anarchists. We're ready to understand abolition. And so I call myself an abolitionist. I don't believe in slavery is a good way to live. I know it's not a good way to live. It doesn't matter what I believe. I know slavery is bad for us. I know that it's going to end at a certain point, like the book points out, the end of all evil. Slavery won't last. Nature won't allow it forever. And so it's a condition, a sucky condition that we're in right now that we kind of have to suffer through until more people come to this realization. So I really put the onus on the listener that if we want to make that transition, if we want to work in that direction, we have to have the philosophy of an anarchist, right? But that doesn't mean that I want you to get out your guns and start shooting authoritarians, because that's not going to be the action that's going to get us there. In fact, that's probably going to put us back. It's going to make us look bad, and it's not going to really get us there, in my personal opinion. And so I think in terms of timing, it's important for us to understand where we're at in this progression of trying to make the change in the world. And my point is that we're still on a philosophy teaching and learning what natural law is before we can really get to the rhetoric stage of really like putting that wisdom into action as teams, as groups, as organized individuals, you know. I'm curious your take on that.
I like the way you break down that nuance there. Not only would the armed rebellion now be not successful, if it was going to be successful, then I would be like, okay, we can at least consider it. But the issue here is not even that. It's not that we have the tyrants and the abusers that exist. If we remove them, we're going to put the same thing into place in a few years and a few generations once again, because the change has to happen in the mind first. It's not the power that rules over us that puts us in this condition of slavery. It's the power vacuum that we've created by being loyal to things that hurt us, not being developed, actualized individuals, hurting each other, and not addressing the things that go wrong within households, within families, right? I think about how can we even talk about, you know, systems of government if, you know, we haven't solved the pervasive issue of, say, child abuse. It's just one of the things, right? It's just like one of these things that go wrong all over the place. And that's even that without, if we take the government out of it, just what we do as individuals. So, you know, I've said both. I've identified myself as an anarchist to kind of show that, hey, this is my worldview and I'm not apologizing for it. I don't need any rules. All the laws are coming from the universe and I can understand them. So I don't need any external authority. I've identified myself, like you say, abolitionist. It's good to identify in reference to the actual problem, which is we're in the state of tyranny and we want to get out of it, as opposed to anarchy, which could sound like you're really detached from it, like you're just not recognizing it. It's one thing to not recognize the control system, but then also we have to say, okay, but the control system is here. It's got the boot on our neck. We want to get the boot off of our neck. Both of those are true. I've identified myself as an American patriot to make that point that, hey, you know, I'm an immigrant here. I'm from Poland, right? But I'm living the principles of this country. And of course, I'm opposed to government, but not everybody is. Like, not everybody's ready to be this kind of a warrior type, you know, on YouTube or in whatever other aspect. And I think, like, you know, like our daughters and people that are going to be existing within the system, they're not going to take their AR-15s and go to, you know, to do all that. Why shouldn't they work within the system and appeal to, you know, put the pressure on government to do at least what they claim to do, at least follow the Constitution? Not that I'm supporting the Constitution, but I see us as we got to have a full frontal attack on the control system from everywhere. The anarchists, the abolitionists, the voluntarists, whatever we call ourselves, okay? Even the anarcho-capitalists and, you know, there seems to be a common law movement gaining some momentum. You know, let's work together with those guys. We can all do that. And there's a different, like the thing about timing, that there's a different language, a different note that you could play for other people to get them to understand that it's going to click for them. So I fully agree with you there.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I thought maybe we go next is, you know, kind of working towards the more solution. What are the notes we play? What are the songs we sing? How do we actually liven our friends, family, communities to recognize these principles? You know, like I thought of another, you know, here I am, Mr. Allegory Metaphor Man. We used to have to clean this big giant concrete floor at the mess hall of this camp I used to go to, right? And you first went through with the dry mop and the brooms to get all the dust up.
Yep.
And, you know, imagine if someone just kept saying, let's just mop. Let's just get to the mopping because that's the finish, right? And that's almost like describing anarchy, like let's just get rid of the rulers, right? But if you didn't take the time with the sweeping process first, and you start getting out the wet mop and dipping it in the water and mopping the floor when there's still a bunch of dirt, fragments of dirt all over the floor, what's going to happen? Well, your water in your mop bucket's going to get dirty instantly. The dirt's going to be all over the mop. And all you're really doing is spreading the dirt all over the floor. So when it dries, you're going to see these big swirls of dirt. And it's kind of like what you're describing, trying to start changing the world without doing the actual work that needs to be done first, which is dealing with our process of thinking and philosophy. So philosophy, I see as a survival mechanism going forward for humanity. We have to get our head right. And I also imagine this as like an alcoholic. You know, you can, if you just keep blundering forward while drinking a fifth of tequila every night, you're not going to build a beautiful tapestry of whatever you're trying to build. You have to actually make that realization, like, okay, I got to stop drinking the tequila, a fifth of tequila every night. The alcoholic has to admit the problem. And so as a people who have been addicted to this collectivist, Satanist, me first kind of way of living for at least a few generations, who knows how much longer, but the modern technological version is at least two generations back. It's this me first mentality. It's collectivist decision-making processes that we're going to all decide together through a vote, and we're going to steal each other's money in all these organized, supposedly organized ways, and that's going to make it all happen. As long as we keep accepting that, the mentality of the largest percentage of people, we're leading ourselves into a trap. So I propose that to you. How do you see the solution working? How do you see a change manifesting, if it is possible?
Overall, it's just, I don't mean to just repeat myself, but overall, I see the solution as being the same way we got into the problem in the first place. Incremental, tiptoe, influence from all different directions. Slowly getting to the state of freedom by making it the desirable thing, the cool thing, the enjoyable thing. It's really the exact dark occult process that got us in there in the first place. Reversing that by actually being very crafty and mindful with the truth, and showing people that love is on this side, beauty and happiness is on this side. That's kind of like a general, that's the big picture answer for me, right? As far as like a real closer practical solution, I think the urgent, like the real battleground is relationships between men and women, because I see, maybe this is not everywhere, but I see it in the city that I'm from. It seems like there's such a division, such a detachment. This is the idea behind the sonic divorce. If we don't have these families, or even before you get to the family, even just striking a conversation, there seems to be this distrust, or this idea that you already know, you don't, there's no wonder in meeting a new person anymore. Everybody is so alike. It's the same looking cars, the same looking, you know, the streaming services with the same looking movies, the songs sounding the same. So for me, I stress relationships and that communication between people. And kind of to incorporate what I was saying before that as the big picture solution, I think we have to make it enjoyable. It's not just painstaking work. We're not going to get to freedom if it's just hard labor. It has to be rewarding too. It has to be enjoyable. And it is. It is. It's just we have to convey that message that, you know, it's not all... It's not just a fight. It's not just constant war and then we'll be free. That doesn't resonate with people. People have a war.
Is that what your track Hard Labor is kind of about? I haven't like closely listened to the lyrics, but it just made the connection right now.
Yeah. So, Hard Labor was actually this idea of hard labor, right? But actually the feeling that I had when I was making the song is quite the opposite. Is the hard labor is actually a play on words, like a baby kicking, you know, the labor as in going into labor for the woman giving birth to a child. So it's more so me actually enjoying this thing. You may call it hard labor, but I'm actually just having fun. So again, this is the other side of that, to actually have fun with it.
Well, and that's one way, you know, to do it. Come to think of it, like a lot of times my work has been like construction, like a lot of times it's a wet, rainy day, it's cold out, and my hand hurts from something happened yesterday, and my freaking cord keeps shorting out. But you have to, in those moments, find a way to like, okay, I'm gonna make this fun. And you start joking with the other guys, like swearing about the stupid cord or making up a dumb song to get you through the day. What the fuck, broken cord, I did it anyway, you know. And all of a sudden you cheer up, you sing through it, you march through it, you know. And that's what soldiers have done through time. They sing and they march through the pain and the struggle, and that is the hero's journey. And sorry to interrupt you, but
it's the best. That's exactly it. And it's so much. It's so you just start hum to yourself and say these ridiculous things. Sometimes I'll be working by myself and I think, man, if the homeowner decided to come by, they're gonna say, well, this guy must have lost his mind. Who's building my house? But that's what it is, you know. That connection is always there. We just the same kind of work. A lot of times, you know, I'm I love, like, I had a day a couple years ago where it was like 100 plus degrees and we're digging a trench, but it was, we could only do it by hand. And it was just like super hot. And I was like, brutal. All right, let's have some fun. So I take my shirt off and you know, just, and then again, I felt this like gratitude for the earth because it is so damn hard. I think of this as like a, you know, like a woman, like, you know, she's not making it easy for me, but you know, God damn it. Like I'm gonna, you know, I could do this. I'm not gonna give up, you know? And, it is a magical thing and you can make it enjoyable. The same kind of hard work, you could make it last forever in your mind, or you could put your mind into a state where you're actually engaged in what you're doing. Like you're actually there enjoying it. And there's, you can't enjoy everything you're doing down to the way, you know, you put the square, you make the mark, you measure it, you cut, you can have your own rhythm. You could make that fun. Or if it feels like you have somebody breathing down your neck, then it's going to be miserable. This is why a lot of guys, you know, we don't like to work with the owner watching us or the boss watching us. And then it seems like everything is hard to do. This is the concept of timing. But we can get ourselves into a place where we're good, you know, let them watch. I'm going to show them how it's done. You know, this is the thing.
That subtle transition too, I've really seen in my life, like for most of the years of my life, like it's school, where they're telling you, here's what you have to do, here's what you have to do. And I was always, like you were saying, I was always naturally rebellious. I didn't want to do it just because someone's telling me to do it. And sometimes I even like the project, but I'm slightly irritated that I have to do it. And the same has been true with work all these years, having to work for somebody. And then kind of getting that point in my life where I'm realizing like, okay, if I want to go more in the anarchistic direction, I'm going to have to take responsibility for more aspects of my life. And so in the last, you know, 5-6 years of my life, I've taken my work to where I'm in charge of my day. And when I work for people, it's me and them most times directly, not 100%, but as much as I can. And I'd say that adds a huge joy to my life. Like today, I just wake up when I feel like it most times and no one's going to snap the whip. You know what I mean? It's only me that's like, shit, I should have worked more last week. Yeah. And I think that, so there is a merging of this philosophy and then living it in real life, but it really takes hard work. Like I had to work 2 jobs or 3 jobs for a while to get to that point where I could have that certain amount of freedom. And even there, I'm not doing that great financially always, but I'm happy because I'm doing my podcast. I'm doing interviews with people like you, and I get to make decisions in my life. Anytime where we have to make decisions and there's some coercive force, our heart's not going to be in it the same. It's just how we are as beings. So.
And you don't just do that. You made a, you know, epic conference that inspired now Natural Law Music Festival, which is...
Oh, which yeah. Is I wanted you to talk about that. What's going on with that? You and Gary and Jerry, is it? Jerry,
yeah. Jerry? And a few other people that we've got helping out. You know, John behind the scenes, Derek is in. And I expect that circle to grow as we get closer. But it's just snowballing momentum from the Funnel Conference, which is, you know, it wasn't just me, but Leslie, so much so. You know, I thought her presentation really, it embodied that, everything that I said, Leslie's presentation felt like, you know, so, and that's what it should have been. It just worked out that way. And there was a lot of music throughout, you know, incorporated into the conference. And now we're going to have an online music festival. We're going to have, I'll be there. We're going to have live music, pre-recorded music, presentations.
How do people find out or get involved with that?
So right now, we're actually, it's in the early to mid stages where as far as a central hub, a website, there's a Telegram group that we can link that I'll have to get the link and send it to you.
Cool.
But it's going to, we're still working on it where we're going to actually direct people. But it is going to be a multi- a faceted approach where it seems like it's going to be a festival with 1,000 names. Is it going to be Sound Path? Is it going to be Nature's Rhythm? Is it going to be soundtrack of freedom, because we've got a lot of different people coming from a lot of different backgrounds, different styles of music, you know? Like I'm not a real musician. I talk over beats. I got rhythm and stuff. Well,
that's,
you know,
real for me, man. I like it.
Thank you. But you know what I mean? It's just that it's a total different world than someone who's singing, who's playing the guitar, playing the drums. Crip Rick is involved in that as well, right? So we're blending a lot of different genres. And I see that again, the metaphors and allegories, it's just like how we get to the state of freedom. You got people that they don't have to speak the same language, but they're feeling the same energy, the same sound. We're all trying to get to this thing. Everybody's getting to it in their own way. And so we're looking to really capitalize on that and have a song to, we already have the philosophy. Now we're going to put the music there to accompany the philosophy, our worldview, natural law, and everything that we care about. This is another thing. It's just like another chapter in all of our stories as these content creators. You know, this is I think we both feel the same way. This is not just about us, but this is a story about us too. It feels like our lives, that individual journey, the heroic path, however you want to define it. We're not just discovering the truth about the universe, we're discovering the truth about ourselves. And when you look at art and music, it is that kind of manifesto, that expression, showing where you came from and your experiences that are going to be totally unique to those of someone right next to you. But at the same time, it's going to show how much you have in common, not just your differences. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. It's actually, you know, for years I've done some songwriting myself. And it's been a while, like since I got more into the podcasting, I've kind of put that aside and my guitar is just catching dust. But actually had out my little music making iPad the other day, and I was actually using that beat that you put in your presentation, and I was like, I wonder if I can make up something to this, you know. And it's kind of got that juice flowing in me again. But you know, everyone can express in their own unique way, and I do think like that was one of my biggest takeaways from Humanity Rising, the Funnel 4 conference, is that like since I started doing the work of podcasting, talking about natural law, I remember when I first started out, I did like a series that was very logical. It was very left brain thought out. Like first we need to talk about value, and then we need to talk about interconnectedness, and you know, and I'm realizing that left brain approach is great for me to think it out and figure out my rhetoric. But as far as the listener, people are easily more easily drawn into something through feeling and emotion. In fact, we study marketing people make decisions almost always from their heart, from their emotions. And so I think in terms of marketing, selling, getting this message out to people about natural law, freedom, truth, I think our creative expression is that level of mastery that we've already studied the left brain process of getting to these conclusions, and we understand the rhetoric in our head, but now we're able to kind of freely express in a repetition, in a flow, in an imaginative self way that's unique. And that's word you used in your presentation that I really appreciate too, like your unique imaginative creative expression really brings out that divine part of the universe that someone can relate to and be inspired by and light that fire and get their hands moving. So, yeah,
thank you.
I'm pretty inspired by that. And I'm glad to see people connecting, and that's what it's all about.
Thank you. Yeah. I think it's crucial to show that creative part of yourself, because also we want to show people that, you know, we're not just like a professor. We're not these icons that are going to just spit out all this knowledge. Like people have to relate to us. We have to relate to each other. So this is the thing about music is, you know, you might make mistakes. You're going to show a part of you. It's like very much bearing your soul and exposing your emotions. It's always a risk. There's an inherent risk anytime you're going to, you know, reveal the innermost things about yourself. But when you do it, this is how we show that we're real. And this is the advantage we have that, hey, we're actually the real deal. So you could check, you can verify for yourself in a world where, you know, online, there's a million things and somehow sometimes it's hard to tell, you know, this guy's saying the right things, but it just doesn't feel right. So this is our, you know, this is our authenticity that we bring to the table.
Another awesome word. I like to use authenticity. Yeah. And by keeping our face and our names out there, I think that's part of the thing that I really appreciate. The content type of creators that we look for the Funnel Conference are people that are doing what you're describing, that are really just bringing it straight from their heart. Like, I'm Conrad Rogas, yeah, and here's what I have to say, and here's my rap. Take it or leave it. You know, it's like you're just opening your heart to people. And if they don't want to hear that or take that, that's their hard, callous decision. You know what I mean? It's a very heart opening, welcoming thing that we're doing for people, you know?
Yeah. Starting with a very simple thing of just first name and last name, regardless of what that means to you. Like, imagine if Nikola Tesla was like Nico Lights or something, you know, why this has never happened in history. Why do we now insist on anonymity and kind of putting on a face, you know,
avatar?
Yeah. And there's a lot of that.
Used to it in so many ways, right? MySpace, Facebook, all these things have been training us. Your little thing on your phone that shows your, you know, is that you or is that a projection of you? Yeah.
Well, that's a nightmare. You know, imagine you meet somebody, you meet a girl or really like a girl meets you and then it's all good and nice. And then you actually meet and then you go home together and it turns out this guy was not what he was saying he is. Why do we do that? That's the worst.
Yeah.
This is what destroys the world more than anything, right? Like this so duality and polarity.
How do you meet, you know, something I ask a lot, how do you meet somebody in a romantic relationship when everybody's wearing masks? You know, you can't even see a smile and you're supposed to date someone. Like, how's that going to work? Yeah. The halt to humanity's progress. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt your flow there.
No, that's... you know, you talk about objectifying and not being, you know, being shallow. Like, what's more shallow than that? You don't even see the face. You're just seeing a covering. So what are we in it for? Is it just like a bag of flesh and bones? Like, come on, we're more than that now.
Absolutely.
But, you know, all I was saying is that polarity and duality, I'm not saying that those are bad things because they could be beautiful things. But detachment, disconnection, that you're going to present, you're going to put up a front to be one thing, and then on the back end, you're a different thing. All that does is, I said it in a different way before, like a power vacuum. You're just creating this muddy gray area where things can go wrong. Why not just be upfront? This is what we all like. We all say we like honesty, right? But practicing it, we don't. But I don't get why. It's like we don't even... My problem is, like, it's not even just me first. If the world was just selfish as hell, that's one thing. It's worse than that. We're not even doing what's in our self-interest. People are doing actually things that are like...
Psychopaths they're doing first.
What they think should be, you know, like what they think they should want. It's not even for them selfishly. That would even be a step up from what we have.
That's true. You know? It's psychopaths first right now. Yeah, let's let them go ahead, psychopaths. Go ahead and rape our children and steal our families. We'll just go ahead and let you to the front of the line and make the decisions for us. The more you've raped and killed and destroyed people, the more opportunity you have to rule over the rest of us.
Yep. That's it's like those are the values.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's pretty sad shape. Wow. Look, it's 11:11 on my clock right now. I've been having
1:11 for me. So
are you perfect. Serious? I've been having like a series. Like yesterday, it was like 3:33, 4:44. I was just like hitting on all.
Today's 3:30. You know.
Wow. It's all meant to be, Conrad.
Absolutely.
Well, we've been going at it for a good hour here, and great introductory hang out here. I'm looking forward to getting together with you again in the future. Maybe we could do a more focused breakdown on something. But yes. I'll give you the floor right now if you want to talk about anything that you want people to hear, future work, where people can find you, all that type of thing. Go ahead. The floor is yours.
Also, didn't expect that. So today I'm planning to do 3 videos, like in the short term. I got a lot on my plate right now, right? But it's just my show this week in Tierney is week in and week out. I don't do it because because I have to, but I do want to show people the consistency, right? And the stability. Hey, no matter what happens, guys, you could count on me. I'm going to be talking about something this week in Tierney every week. If you don't hear from me, then that means I've been arrested or I'm dead because otherwise I'm going to be doing my show. As far as long-term plans, it's the Natural Law Music Festival, which is still a flexible down to the name. That's Freedom Soundtrack Festival is coming in this fall. We're looking at last week of August, first week of September, that kind of that Labor Day weekend. So look forward to that. In the meantime, so truthandlaw.com is my website. Soon I will transfer it. Truth and Law is still going to be a thing, but I'm going to transfer it to conradbrogas.com. I've got somebody who agreed to make my website. So I know that's a difficult thing to do, but hey, she expressed her willingness to do it. So I'm looking forward to that. So look forward to that soon. And by the time I'm 33, I'm going to write a book. Is a thing. I've never said this before, but it is going to be like this whole thing. I'm going to put it into one really set that's going to be like this. It's going to be everything. It's going to be music. It's going to be philosophy. It's going to be about art, everything. So I've never really announced that before, but I think it's been a really special show that, you know, thank you for having me on here. And yeah, we just got started. So we'll be back at it before you know it.
Right on. Yeah. And that on the book thing, I want to let people know, if you don't have a copy of The End of All Evil, go to my page on endevil.life, and you can either hit me up through email and we can work out how to get you one of these copies. And I also put a button on my website, but no one's hit it yet, so I don't know if it's working. So if someone could give that a shot, I'd really appreciate it. And I'm working on my own book, and this is the first copy I have. Wow. How to Become a Hero, the book that changed my life.
Wow.
By Chris Jansen, and it's still in progress, but it's going to be released sometime this year. And I want to thank Sarah Cross for her help on getting me going on that. It's something I've been working on, like you were saying, for a long time. And after the funnel conference, she kind of gave me the kick in the butt I needed to really focus in on it. And I got that version printed there. It needs a lot of work, but it is a thing, and it's going to be out soon. So I hope that inspires you Conrad, to get your book going. So much easier it's than amazing it used to how, be. You know, there's so many tools out there to help get it done.
So I you already gave me the floor, and now I'm jumping in again. I just thought that it's amazing how women bring out the heroic in us, right?
Yeah, and actually we were talking about social media, you know, for years. I stayed away from it. I actually had a flip phone. I remember in construction, I kept getting mad because the other phone would flex in my pocket and weird things would happen. It would call people or cancel people. So I went out and got a flip phone. This is the most simplest one I could possibly get. And I just rocked that for a while. And then it was towards the end of that when I finally realized, like, oh, I should use Facebook to find other people that study Mark Passio's work. And I started a group there. And that was how I met Leslie Powers, who is, you know, the most beautiful, awesome woman. And we spend every day together. And that wouldn't happen if it wasn't for that weird CIA control device called Facebook. So, you know, like you said, it's a sword. It's all in how we use it. And just because it's an evil device created by psychopaths does not mean we can't find a way to grow love out of it, because this universe is made of love. And it all comes from the divine source. And so those of us that recognize that, it's hard to trip us up once we're locked on. So No, I'm so glad you're locked on, and the way you talk about your commitment, and that's how I feel too. We got to be persistent, and we got to keep at it, and let nothing stop us. You know, not even death. I'll come back again. I'm gonna haunt you people with freedom and natural law.
All right, you get the final word. No, I'm not topping that one. That's awesome.
There you go. Thanks so much, Conrad. It's been a great chat, and I know our folks out there who are watching are really going to appreciate this. Check out Conrad's website and go to freedomundernaturallaw.com in the meantime, and there's a link to Telegram group, and there you can find out about, until we get that link together, about the music, Truth and Music. At least you can find us through the tap link, the Freedom Under Natural Law tap link. That's where it all kind of sprouted from, as I recall. And I'm sure we can get the link somewhere in this or future, but great chat. And evil is the destruction of freedom, folks. Let's pass that word along, and we'll see you next time. Thanks much.
Thank you.